Sports columnist with the Tennessean. It's always fun to visit with you, Joe. Hope you've had a good week to this point.
It's been good so far. Good to be with you, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
Hey, first things first, Saturday night, Knoxville. We think about these programs as far as Tennessee and Florida, and you go back over the past 20, 30 years and just the importance of this rivalry. And in fact, Tennessee will be reminding everybody of that, knowing that they're honoring the team that won the national title 20 years ago, the 1998 squad. And we look at, you know, Dan Mullen's group, what he's trying to get done down in Gainesville. We look at Jeremy Pruitt as far as Tennessee. I don't know if it's fair or not as far as a measuring stick or not, but it'll certainly there'll be some that'll be playing that card after the conclusion of Saturday night. What about you? What do you feel like the importance of it for both of these programs?
Well, you know, I've been focused on Tennessee's schedule here, which is brutal. I mean, it's amazing when you think that, you know, they're going to be playing Georgia, Alabama, and Auburn for the next three opponents after this. And I know there's an off week in there, but still, then it's a trip to South Carolina. I mean, it's such a nasty stretch for Tennessee that, to me, this game is – it's just so important to win this game. Because if you don't, you really are looking at the possibility of 2-6. And you know, all the complaining and negativity and all that goes with 2-6. I mean, there's just not much this team's going to be able to do against Georgia and Alabama, and probably not at Auburn either. But this game is a game that I think, you know, Tennessee can win and has to win. But, you know, if you look at Florida's schedule, I mean, it's not like they've got cakewalk coming up either. I mean, they've got a lot of really tough games ahead for them, too, and they have to play, well, for one thing, they have to play Mississippi State, you know, Dan Mullen's old school, you know, from the other division. So, I mean, it's really important for both of these teams, and they both have to look at this like an opportunity that you really can't afford to squander.
You know, I was talking about this on the show yesterday, and we, you know, I was talking about Florida State and the fact that where they were 2 years ago to where they are today, and, you know, how quickly that, you know, when you talk about high school students or those in elementary school, they forget when your team was relevant. If you go through a span of years where you're not a part of the national landscape, and a good example, the worst team right now in the SEC, I don't think anybody would debate it, is certainly Arkansas, right? Just 7 years ago, on November 20th of 2011, the Arkansas Razorbacks were ranked the number three team in the country behind LSU and Alabama. So they've gone from that to being the worst team in the SEC in 2018.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I mean, I feel like in the SEC nowadays, I mean, everybody's trying to build and everyone has, you know, one program in particular that they're all chasing, although I think, you know, we're seeing Georgia obviously really put together some foundation here for a lot of good teams moving forward. But it seems like with most of these other programs, it's like, can you rally up for an uprising? But then you can easily fall down so fast. And, of course, in the case of – I mean, I never thought, you know, Florida, for example. I mean, you think about – where they were, you know, same time span as 7-8 years ago. I would not have guessed then that program would fall on the hard times it has. It's like it just doesn't add up. Look at their facilities. Look at the access, the talent they have. I mean, you know, that's just the program that's going to keep rolling. And there you go. And of course, Tennessee now, you know, a good solid decade of mostly struggling. And Tennessee has, you know, not the same access to talent, but, you know, when you talk about fan base and facilities and economic situation, I mean, that's a program that should never struggle like this, you know, the investment in the program. So it's hard. It's hard to maintain anything, and it's easy to just slip and fall off.
I mean, here's the thing, and I'm not sure if you're aware of this, you know, preparing for this game or not, to show you how important, we're not talking about when these two teams would take the field, we're talking about a game where both teams are in the top 25. No. That was a span there in a five-year period where for the five meetings, both of these teams were ranked in the top five in the country, which means the winner of the game had a track as far as with a national championship potential down the road, and the loser derails not only an SEC East, but also a chance to win the conference as far as a conference championship. That's how important, that's what this game used to be, and I'm sure that the fans, especially the longtime fans of both of these programs, want that back.
Oh, yeah. Well, honestly, Johnny, as someone who at the time, I lived in Big Ten country, I covered a Big Ten school, the Tennessee-Florida game was always the game in September that I most looked forward to. And that was the one, whatever it is, if I'm in a press box, I'm going to find the TV that has the Florida-Tennessee game on, or, maybe I have an early game and then you can get home in time to watch it. That was absolute must-see college football TV at those times, Spurrier, Fulmer, and all the stuff that went into that game. And, Spurrier talked trash to everybody, but it was just made it more fun, and those teams were just so loaded. And like you said, the stakes were so high. And the amazing thing is, I was in the Swamp last year, the first time I'd ever seen the place for this game between, let's face it, two very mediocre teams. And it's going to be two very mediocre teams Saturday night, but I bet you that place feels like a top 10 game still, because it sure did last year in the Swamp. It was, although there were, the fans were unhappy, there's a lot of booing at Jim McElwain, but it was still a fantastic atmosphere. This is not two also-rans playing. The surroundings tell you that this is bigger than that.
Joe Rexrow with the Tennessean joining us again. Hey, by the way, you're talking about crowds and atmosphere and all that. We got the 2019 schedule yesterday as far as the SEC conference games, along with the entire schedule for all 14 teams in the SEC. And I've been on this point. I'm going to keep making it until it becomes a rule. I want every team playing as far as from Power 5 conferences to play at least 10 games against Power 5 conferences or those top independents, which means Notre Dame, I'll even give you BYU and Army. Other than that, here for the second straight year, Arkansas will be playing only 8, and that's the conference games. There are 4 non-conference matchups outside of Power 5 conferences. I bring it up because there's actually a Twitter site you go to, a Twitter page, where they take pictures of empty stadiums, and they're showing these stadiums middle of the games. For example, a good one was Stanford versus UC Davis, and here's a top 25 Stanford team, certainly thinking about Pac-12 and being a spoiler as far as one of those four college football playoff teams, and they expect fans to pay full-time bucks to go to these games when it's really, it's UC Davis. And so my point is, I just wish more teams would adopt that rule. And we're actually seeing a handful of teams are actually going to be doing it next year. And I was really, glad to point that out. I just wish it would become the rule instead of the exception.
No, I'm with you. Look, you got to give people competitive games that they should be expected to pay full price for. And there's not enough of that. And, everyone on various sides of this has their own stake. Coaches are going to say, I can't get my team beat up like that. And, I'm not going to win enough, and I'm going to lose my job and all this stuff. But you've got to communicate to the fans. I'll throw the Big Ten at you. They've got 9 conference games, and they've got a no FCS rule. So, that right there. And they try, for the most part, they're pretty good at least having one other Power 5 team, among the three that they schedule. They don't all do that. So it's not formalized, but still. I would like to see more conference games, and I think that's what people want to see. And, I don't think it's fair that the SEC would have 8 conference games and they all play that late-season FCS game. And to me, that's an advantage for them when you compare it to other conferences. And I think it should be, it should be look more the same across the board. And I think you got to give people more games if they want to watch.
All right, and I will argue that I don't care if it's an extra conference game or not. You know why? I'll give you Florida's schedule in 2019, the reason why. They're one of the 3 teams in the SEC playing opponents as far as, you know, Power Five opponents and those big independents as far as playing 10 of the 12. And the reason I'm going to point out Florida, why I disagree with you, is because two of their four, they begin the year against the Hurricanes of Miami and Orlando, and they will end the year at home against Florida State. And that's why I will say I don't care if it's 8 or 9 conference games, just as long as it's 10 games against Power Five, you know, competition.
Well, hey, now throw in another SEC West team, and it's an amazing schedule, Johnny.
Well, they're not going to go that far. Now you're talking about, you know, coaches aren't going to go crazy on you. You know, Bear Bryant's not coming back to schedule in 1 year Nebraska, USC, Notre Dame. Those days are long gone as far as scheduling outside of conferences. But I do feel like this is a simple rule where expecting the big leap up as far as, you know, an FCS playing a Power Five conference. I don't mind FCS if they want to play the Group of Five or the other programs, but if you're a Group of Five, certainly you have the capability of moving up or down. But I just don't want to see a jump over two levels, if you know what I mean. Not unless you're the national champ year in and year out at the FCS level, where if that's the case, you can beat probably half the Power Five teams out there anyway.
Well, right, yeah, you know, I mean, Appalachian State, I'll give you a tip of the cap, you schedule them. I also think you're a little crazy for doing that, considering the way they give teams trouble. But, yeah, I mean, you think about this. I mean, 30 years ago, I remember, you know, Big Ten schools were starting to weave in one Mid-American Conference game among a non-schedule that otherwise was absolutely, you know, other power conferences. And it was controversial. It was like, you can't schedule a MAC school. I mean, you think about that mindset then versus now, and actually the MAC schools are like, that's good scheduling, and they're charging $1.2 million for you to schedule them. You know, I mean, it's such a different deal. And again, the people who lose out on this are the customers who used to pay for a season ticket and see all quality football games. And, you know, there you go. If you want to talk about how you can figure out how to keep more people in these stadiums, you got to get in better games.
Joe Rexroad joining us. You know how big Saturday afternoon is over at Vanderbilt Stadium for the Commodores as they play host to South Carolina? You know what the record is for most wins in a single season for Vanderbilt, Joe?
That's a good question. I would assume it's probably, James Franklin had 9. I don't know if they ever did more than that because they had smaller schedules back in the day, right?
Very good. The record is 9. Yeah. And I bring it up because of this. If they win Saturday against South Carolina, they're going to beat Tennessee State the following week. So through the first 5 weeks, they will be 4-1. Now, yes, I understand they still have to go to Georgia, but my point is 9-3 at that point, if you can beat South Carolina this Saturday at home, 9-3 is a possibility, which means they would be playing in a bowl game for a chance to be the first team in the history of their program to have a 10-win season.
Well, you're leaping some steps here, but you know what? I've looked at their schedule too, and there's one game. There's one game that I don't feel good at all about them competing in. It's at Georgia and everything else on there. I mean, really, they have a great schedule this year in terms of the SEC West. They go to Arkansas. I mean, you can't have a more manageable road game for your SEC West game. And then they have Ole Miss coming in. I mean, I think those are the clear worst two on that side. You know, Florida at home, they can get that done. I mean, you know, at Missouri, at Kentucky, those are tough games. But they're not unwinnable. And, of course, I mean, right now, long way to go, but from what I've seen of both Tennessee and Vanderbilt, and I've seen them both live, I absolutely think Vanderbilt is the better football team right now. So, you know, I think at least comfortably getting to a bowl game is definitely on the table, you know, if they can get this win. And I think they have a great chance to get it.
And that's the whole point. I mean, by the way, the Gamecocks coming in, they're a 2-point favorite coming in. But 2 points is basically, we're talking about a game could go one way or the other. And I think a lot of that has to do is because still, even after the way Vanderbilt played Saturday in South Bend, I don't know now where the faith is as far as how good Notre Dame is. And they're probably still not giving, you know, Vanderbilt a lot of compliments here. I still go back to what Kyle Shurmur brings to the table with that leadership. I bring to the concept now as far as defense flying around to the ball. And what I'm describing, too, with a win against South Carolina at 4-1, I mean, we're talking about you can lose to Georgia, lose to somebody else of those final six games, and still be 9-3 with a chance to get your 10th win in a bowl game.
Yeah, and that's and you know that would be a remarkable season, you know, and a season then you'd look back and say, man, could have won that Notre Dame game too.
Well, that's still, right.
You're talking about certainly a top 25 ranking at the end of it. You're talking about probably playing in a New Year's Day, pretty solid bowl game. You'd also be talking about, and I know this is probably something Vanderbilt fans find incredibly annoying. I know all fans do when people start talking about their coach. But, you know, Derek Mason's a guy, invariably we talk about, is he on any kind of hot seat? But at Vanderbilt, the discussion flips so quickly from, is this coach in the hot seat, to, whoa, who's going to come hire this coach away from you? I mean, some other schools were looking at Derek Mason last year, amid a season that ended up 5-7. So, I mean, that's the interesting thing is that if he pulls off a season like that, I promise you, there are people who are going to be looking very closely at Derek Mason.
As a Florida State grad, I would take Derek Mason right now. Right now. Not even hesitating. Right now. I'm just throwing that out there. All right, Tennessee, the Titans will be taking on Jacksonville on Sunday. And when these two teams tangle, boy, we look at the soap opera between these two programs, especially dating back to 2016, where the Titans going up against a subpar Jacksonville Jaguars squad. All they had to do was win on Christmas Eve, controlling their own destiny to win the AFC South and move on. And they didn't get it done. So I move forward to this week. Here's Jacksonville fresh off of that huge win for them against New England, setting the tone for 2018 as the best. In fact, this week, the number one team as far as power ratings are concerned with regards to the USA Today. And the Titans with the opportunity to take that away and get a share of first place after Sunday.
Yeah, it's a huge game. And like you said, I mean, Jacksonville, that was sort of, we're always going to look at that as the day the Titans blew it, and of course Mariota gets, broken leg, just a disastrous day. But it also might have been the day we kind of saw a preview of what Jacksonville was about to become. And now look at them. I mean, I would probably say Jacksonville Rams, probably the top two teams right now.
That's what you're right, is 1-2. Jacksonville and the Rams, 1-2 right now.
It's a really good team. I think it's a clear favorite to win this division. And, I think that the Titans obviously, last year that was a real eye-opener, going there after struggling so much in the first week, going there and just pounding that defense. I mean, you look back on that, I mean, they did whatever they wanted to do. They ran the ball. Derrick Henry ran the ball extremely well, but Mariota making big plays downfield. And then, of course, they beat him to get in the playoffs. But this just feels different because of the run Jacksonville made in the playoffs and now handling New England like that. I mean, this feels like the Titans going in and trying to pull off a big upset. And, I mean, maybe it would feel a little less different. Maybe it would feel a little bit more like a, clash of the, I won't say Titans, but clash of two really strong teams if we knew about Marcus Mariota and if he were healthy and if, he had been playing well through 2 weeks. But, after going over there today, Johnny, if I had to guess right now, my guess would be Blaine Gabbert again. I mean, again, things can change dramatically on any day. Marcus Mariota might wake up and might have all the sensation in his fingers back. But right now, it's very, very questionable that he would play. And then, so to me, I think it was an amazing game plan and performance to beat Houston, but I think that's probably got a one-week shelf life, and you're not going to be able to win games like this if you don't have your main people playing.
I saw your tweet earlier today, and it's I use the reference as far as nerve damage. It's like if you've got carpet and you got the couch on the carpet, you can move the couch, but guess what? You can see where the couch still used to be on the carpet. That's what nerve damage is, and in a matter of time, you just don't know what that timetable is before it goes away. And so you're right. It certainly could be Blaine Gabbert again on Sunday, and we'll see where the chips fall. Hey, look, if it had the same result as it did this past Sunday, then thumbs up as far as that's concerned. As always, I'm sorry, go ahead.
If they can run Wildcat, get 200 yards out of Derrick Henry, it won't matter.
Amen to that. All right, before we let you go, remind the listeners again how they can keep up with all your coverage.
Yep, thanks, Johnny, at Tennessean.com. I'm on Twitter at Joe Rexroad, and please buy a newspaper.
Hey, Joe, we appreciate you, buddy. Be safe in your travels. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks a lot, Johnny.
Thank you.
Joe.